Justice-elect Chris Taylor's lopsided victory has cemented a liberal majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and now it has Democrats looking ahead to November. It's Thursday, April 9th, and this is Wisconsin Today Morning News. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. There are a lot of elections set to take place in November, one of them, of course, for governor. The Democratic candidates for governor are trying to differentiate themselves right now as they debate how they would handle health care. And voters in Port Washington have passed a referendum prompted by a data center backlash.
A handful of representatives who are failing to meet the community where we're at.
Stay with us.
Hi there, it's Rachel Martin from NPR News. I am proud to work with stations around the country, including WPR, to bring you news that you can trust. We search out the backstory, give voice to the diversity of our nation, question along with you, and share moments of beauty, moments of joy. This comprehensive reporting is possible thanks to listener contributions. Be a part of this important work when you give at WPR.org. Thanks.
Liberal Justice-elect Chris Taylor's landslide victory in Tuesday's Wisconsin Supreme Court election has Democrats looking forward to November. Taylor beat conservative Judge Maria Lazar by 20 percentage points. That's a margin that's practically unheard of in a state as politically divided as Wisconsin. Democratic strategist Joe Zepecki says her race and others around the country should be a, quote, five-alarm fire for Republicans.
What this tells me, wearing my strategist hat, is that the Democratic base is so fired up and ready to vote, you don't need to spend $50 or $75 or $100 million to let them know they have an opportunity to go and express their outrage at what's happening in Washington, D.C. at the ballot box.
Republicans say April elections don't indicate what will happen in November, when more voters from both parties usually turn out. Wisconsin voters this fall will also decide Wisconsin's next governor, as well as which party runs each house of the state legislature. The biggest city in Waukesha County has elected a Democratic mayor. Evan Casey has the details.
Waukesha County has long been viewed as a Republican stronghold, but Democrat Alicia Halvenslaven narrowly beat Republican State Representative Scott Allen in the race to become the city of Waukesha's next mayor. Halvenslaven is the current president of the city's Common Council.
We put in so much work. We talked to so many people, knocked so many doors, made so many phone calls. So to see that hard work pay off was really incredible.
Lily Gorin is a political science professor at Carroll University. She says the city is more purple compared to the county.
There is more of a diversity of voters, not just in terms of partisanship, but also in terms of who the voters are.
It's not the first time Republicans lost leadership of the city. The retiring mayor switched parties to become an independent, and voters also elected a Democratic mayor for one term 2 decades ago. Evan Casey, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Voters in Port Washington this week overwhelmingly passed a referendum to give residents more power over local development incentives. It passed with about two-thirds of the vote. The measure requires voter approval for certain large development incentives in the future. You probably guessed this was tied to data centers. This follows a backlash over the city's approval of a tax incremental district for a multi-billion-dollar data center project. Christine Lazoon is with a community group opposing the data center. She says residents want to have more say over their tax dollars getting used to support developments.
This should not be single-handedly decided on by, you know, a handful of representatives who are failing to meet the community where we're at.
Business groups sued to block that ordinance, arguing it would slow economic development. A hearing on the case is scheduled for next week. The lopsided vote in Port Washington comes as polling shows around 70% of Wisconsin voters say the costs of data centers outweigh the benefits. Two Wisconsin mayors who were investigated for separate complaints in their cities will not be facing criminal charges. Those complaints were about audio recording devices in the Green Bay City Hall and the removal of an absentee ballot drop box in Wausau. The Green Bay complaint alleged Mayor Eric Genrich's authorization of audio recording devices inside of City Hall violated people's constitutional rights. And the Wausau complaint alleged Mayor Doug Denny broke the law when he removed an unsecured absentee ballot drop box from the steps of City Hall. A statement from Republican Fond du Lac District Attorney Eric Toney says a bipartisan group of prosecutors determined they could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that either mayor committed a crime. In the Green Bay situation, they said there wasn't evidence people who were recorded had an expectation of privacy. And in Wausau, they determined the receptacle removed by Denny did not fit the state's definition of a ballot drop box. Toney was appointed as a special prosecutor in both investigations. He's currently running for attorney general against Democratic incumbent Josh Call. Seven Democrats running for Wisconsin governor met to discuss health care policy in Madison yesterday. As Anya Van Wagtendonk reports, there's widespread agreement about many policies. This even as the candidates try to differentiate themselves.
Each candidate says they support establishing a public health care option that would allow people to buy into a government plan. But in a crowded field, they're offering different approaches. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez says she wants a public option similar to Colorado's,
which requires premiums to be reduced 5% every year.
And Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said he'd open up Badger Care as the public option.
Well, I don't think that we need to reinvent the wheel.
Each candidate also says they want to make health care more affordable and accessible and to better reach rural Wisconsin. Anya Van Wagtendonk, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, a major traveling exhibit about Chicago painter Gertrude Abercrombie is making its only Midwest stop at the Milwaukee Museum of Art. Stay with us.
There's a certain spirit about being a Wisconsinite.
On Wisconsin Weekend, we celebrate that by exploring the stories that make the state special.
And we meet people doing interesting things who don't always make it into the headlines.
Connect with your Wisconsin community on Wisconsin Weekend.
Saturday afternoon at 3 and Sunday morning at 10 on WPR News.
And finally, in the 1940s, Wisconsin was home to a tight-knit community of artists who embraced magic realism. That's an artistic style that paired detailed realistic paintings with surreal elements. At the center of this group of artists and friends was a Chicago painter named Gertrude Abercrombie, who hosted legendary literary salons at her home in Hyde Park with other artists and jazz greats. Now a major traveling exhibit about Abercrombie's work is making its only Midwest stop at the Milwaukee Museum of Art. Gertrude Abercrombie, The Whole World is a Mystery, is on display in Milwaukee through July 19th, and Wisconsin artists are featured in a companion exhibit called Gertrude and Friends, the Wisconsin Magic Realists. Thomas Basiglio Ritter is Associate Curator of American Art at the Milwaukee Art Museum. He recently spoke with Rob Ferret on Wisconsin Today.
Before we get to the exhibit, I want to look at this concept of magical realism. It can mean different things if it's a novel or visual art or whatever. When it comes to the visual art that we're talking about and Wisconsin's artists of the 1940s, what do we mean by magic realism?
We mean a group of artists that was mostly based in Milwaukee and Madison that at the turn of the 1940s really tried to chart a new way for American painting by rejecting the idealistic style of regionalists like Grant Wood, for example, and really embracing the fantastical, the magical, the sort of dreamlike aspects of life. So they were still interested in their immediate surroundings in the Midwest, but they abstracted those objects and surroundings and coupled them in painting with sort of dreamlike, fantastic elements.
And then there's like surrealist painting coming from Europe from the decades before that. Is that an influence here? Is it something that was kind of slowly trickling into Midwestern art?
Surrealism was absolutely an influence, although I don't think magic realists were really fond of all those isms and titles affixed to them. I think surrealism had its own theoretical sort of backbone that was developed in Europe, and that was definitely different from that. This was sort of a grassroots movement. They didn't have a lot of manifestos or theories like that. They just came together and painted what they felt like painting.
What was the response like to their visions of Wisconsin and Midwestern life being so different than what we might have seen in Midwestern art before that?
They certainly got a lot of coverage and participated in a lot of exhibitions starting in the late 1930s. I think the zeitgeist of the time with the Great Depression and the Second World War made it really easy for their works to be received by the public. They were weird and cultivating that weirdness. And I think it resonated with troubled times as well. And it was something fresh and new that people were craving at the time.
As you look back at these artists, do you get a sense of their personalities? It seems like, from my limited exposure here, a kind of a zany bunch of people getting together to, yeah, make art, but also to hang out and have dinner parties and that kind of thing.
Totally. Quirky is the word I would use. And they cultivated that aspect. They love to get together. They love to party hard. They love jazz music and bebop music starting in the late 1940s. And they were trying to present themselves, whether through their public speeches or through their self-portraits, in a way that was very different from your sort of traditionally trained artists, the art school artists.
How did we land this touring exhibit in Milwaukee? As you mentioned, it's not showing in a lot of places, and I think this is the only Midwestern stop?
It is the only Midwestern stop, and it was a bet from the museum at first because many of her works are smaller scale, and our main exhibition space where that show was presented is 10,000 square feet. So it was definitely going to be a challenge, but I think that our director at the time, Marcel Poletnik, saw the potential for this show to be very relatable and tell a different story of Midwestern art and be fun and entertaining and at the same time deal with a lot of themes from, you know, identity to place. And so they decided to take a bet and take this show. And fortunately for us, no other venue in Chicago especially did want to take on this exhibition.
That was Thomas Basiglio Ritter, Associate Curator of American Art at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Gertrude Abercrombie, The Whole World is a Mystery, is on display at the Milwaukee Museum of Art right now through July 19th, along with a companion exhibit called Gertrude and Friends, the Wisconsin Magic Realists. You can hear their full conversation at wpr.org/Wisconsin Today. And, of course, we'll end the show with a quick check of your forecast. Mostly cloudy and windy from time to time today, with highs in the 40s and 50s. Those clouds will turn to rain overnight. Soaking rain expected in southern Wisconsin. Central parts of the state are looking at a little bit of light rain, with lows in the 20s and 30s tonight. Highs in the 50s, with things drying out tomorrow. And that'll do it for this Thursday. Glad you could join us. Thank you so much for being here for Wisconsin Today Morning News. I'm your host, Alex Crow, and our producer today was Courtney Everett. Have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you again soon.